Welcome to the DMD edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. Our guest today is Chris Lewis, the son of Jerry Lewis, undoubtedly the most famous comedian in Hollywood history. As we all know, Jerry Lewis was the public face of the Muscular Dystrophy Association for over 60 years, and his very first Jerry Lewis telethon was on March 15, 1952. The MDA celebrates its 75th anniversary, and we're here at the 2025 MDA Scientific and Clinical Conference in Dallas, Texas. Chris, it's such a pleasure to have you as our guest.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So, what a history. 75 years of the MDA. Your father was associated with the MDA and basically put it on the map for over 60 years. What brings you to this conference this time?
Well, I worked on the MDA telethon for 39 years with my dad, and MDA is a big part of my life. It actually inspired me to start a foundation that delivered free wheelchairs around the world to people who need them, can't afford them. And I've been doing that for 25 years, been involved in the delivery of 800,000 wheelchairs to 150 countries, and I have been friends with Dr. Don Wood, the head of MDA, for years, and I told him I wanted to help him, and I'm here because I want to learn about what they're doing, how they're doing it, and as they're rebuilding the organization, how I might be able to jump in and help them.
Wonderful. So let's step back a bit, starting with your upbringing. Now, your father was born in New Jersey, in Newark. You were born in L.A., and obviously you grew up in showbiz your entire life.
Well, I spent a lot of time on the studio sets at Paramount Pictures, and that was a lot of fun. But yeah, it was pretty neat getting to go to my dad's television shows and his stage performances and watch him make his movies. And it was exciting.
As I read the foreword to your book, and we'll talk about the book in a second, he was basically insecure. He wanted approval of the audience. He wanted to make people laugh, right? And it was very important for him that people loved him.
It was very important. And the story in the book is the only time it's ever been told accurately. Because, see, my dad was born to vaudevillians. His father was a singer. His mother was a piano player. They lived the bohemian life, traveling through the Borscht Circuit of upstate New York. So my father was left with his grandmother. His grandmother raised him. My dad's first language was Yiddish. So he felt rejected. When an interviewer one time said to my dad, "Describe your childhood," he said, "Tears of loneliness." So he created the clown to make people laugh so he could feel love and acceptance. So that was the core of his being, but he was, from the day he was born till the day he died, he was the most insecure person on the planet.
Incredible. And he was a class clown.
He was a real clown.
Right.
He really was. It was him. He was not making it up. He wasn't performing. He only needed an audience of one. I can't tell you how many times I couldn't eat my meal because he wouldn't stop.
So just to back up a bit, when you were growing up, I mean, you, of course, saw facets of Jerry Lewis that the public never got to see.
True.
So what was it like growing up in his image?
Watching him as closely as I did, I learned a lot. And I learned that I wanted to be like my dad, but not the guy falling down and making silly faces. I wanted to be the answer to people's prayers like he was. That was something that I felt really proud of him for, because I saw the reaction of the families of people with muscular dystrophy, how he had personal relationships with them. He'd get a phone call at dinner from Bob Ross, who ran the organization. He'd say, what do you need me to do? Okay, I'll get on a plane. I'll do whatever you tell me to do. This is how he lived his life. So I saw the facet that he never talked about. He never blew his own horn about how much he did for MDA, how many times he visited the families, how many times he went to a kid's bedside in a hospital. But there are stories in my book from the people who were with him when it happened.
And the name of your book is Jerry Lewis on Being a Person, which is a play on his book that he wrote.
He wrote a book called Being a Person because on the set of The Nutty Professor in the first week when they were shooting in October of 1962, he felt there was some backbiting. You know, people were not getting along real well. So he went home that night and he typed out 45 little lines, like, say good morning to anyone, be nice a lot, buy a dog, kiss a puppy, you know. And he had his sketch artist, John Jensen, do a little drawing for each one. He made a book and he gave it to everybody. And he said within 2 days, everybody was nice to each other. He let what meant the most to him come out onto this piece of paper from his typewriter in one evening. And I realized I modeled much of my life on what he wrote in his book. Because I loved my dad. I wanted to follow his footsteps. So what I did in my book is I interpreted what he meant and why those things meant something to him based on my experiences with my dad watching him and paying attention my entire life.
And yet for some of that time, you guys didn't talk.
Well, when he and my mom divorced, I was living with my mom for 2 years. So we talked. It wasn't always very nice because why didn't you let my guy in to get my stuff? Well, my mom wasn't home. I couldn't let him in the door. I'm going to get shot by her. I have to live with her. So, you know, stuff like that. But that went on for 2 years. And after that, I called him up and I said, hey, you're my dad and I love you and I want to have a relationship with you. So when you come to L.A., I'll take you to dinner and we'll talk. That's exactly what happened. We were as close as could be from 1982 till the day he died.
Incredible. You said his first language was Yiddish growing up. How much of a Jewish household did he have?
Well, he had just about everything on the menu from Linney's Delicatessen delivered to our house once a week. So it was, he said, we're having Jew food tonight. That's it. And my mom knew exactly what that meant, and it was on the table.
So, that's so funny. Yeah. Did he go to Hebrew school or anything like that?
You know, later in life, he claimed to have done everything, but I don't know what the real truth is. I do know that he had a very deep respect for Judaism because his grandfather was a rabbi in Pinsk. Our entire family from Pinsk, the Rudlovich family, were gone after World War II. So they were no longer. So that was a pain he carried with him. And he honored his Jewish faith very much, but he didn't have time for organized religion. He said, it's in my heart. And he said, they want to call me a cardiac Jew? I'm a cardiac Jew, whatever.
And his real name was Levitch.
The root name in Pinsk was Rudlovich. They're Levitch. Yeah, then
right.
His dad changed it to Lewis to not sound so Jewish for his singing career.
But at that time, I know we're digressing, but at that time, the Catskills, the Borscht Belt, that circuit, it was all Eastern European Jews.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's where really he made his career.
Yeah.
In the Borscht Belt.
He did his first stand-up at the age of 16.
And what year was that?
1942.
Yeah. During the war. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you, how did Jerry Lewis, your father, come to decide that muscular dystrophy was going to be his cause?
Read my book.
You started to talk a little bit before about the letter carriers and the first event with
Paul Cohen.
Paul Cohen. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Paul was the founder of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. He owned the Tuck Tape Company in New York. And my dad and Dean Martin became the public face of the Tuck Tape Company, as well as the new Muscular Dystrophy Association in 1950. Then my dad had the great idea in 52. He heard about the New York Cardiac Hospital having a 16-hour telethon on one station in New York. He went to them and he said, Martin and Lewis, who had just become the highest paid act in show business in 1952, he said, we will host that 16-hour telethon for you if you give 25% of what we bring in to the Muscular Dystrophy Association. MDA made $226,000 off the telethon.
Which at that time was a huge amount of money.
Stratospheric, yeah. And then in 1953, he had the idea to go to the Letter Carriers of America and have them deliver an MDA donation envelope to every household in America. Martin and Lewis did a 2-hour simulcast on radio and television on ABC the night before Thanksgiving. And on that Friday, the letter carriers picked up the donation envelopes and MDA made $3.9 million.
Incredible. And that TV, at that time, TV was in its infancy.
True. And right? It was entirely my dad's idea.
How many years did the telethon go?
Well, the Labor Day telethon went from 1966 to 2010. It was 45 years that my dad did that. It was sporadic before that. So there was the 52-53, Martin and Lewis did 56. My dad did 57 and 59 alone. Then he did television shows to benefit MDA in 60, 61, and 62. But then he did not do another one until his Labor Day telethon launched in 66.
And cumulatively, how much money would you say he raised for MDA?
In dollars in, it was about $2.5 billion. But if you adjust it for today's dollars, it's in excess of $5 billion.
Nobody even came close to that.
Nobody even came close.
And so let's talk a bit about MDA and muscular dystrophy research. We saw the video, the promo, showing your father visiting hospitals and visiting laboratories and talking with doctors.
Yeah, he did. And in the back 25% of my book, the chapter is called The Legacy of Philanthropy. And I interviewed people like Dr. Don Wood, who was on the front line as a researcher in the 1970s. He was there for when my dad spoke at his very first scientific conference in 1976 in Colorado, where my dad said to the people, you have to share your science. It's got to go faster. We're losing kids. I know you all want to be a star, but you got to share. And he ingrained that in Don Wood. So when they were looking for the Duchenne muscular dystrophy gene in 1986, two of the researchers were really close, but one needed something the other had. She decided to share. They found the gene. And then Don Wood shared the science with cystic fibrosis, with the ALS Foundation, and they found all these other genetic diseases using the technique designed by Dr. Lou Kunkel.
Just a question about your father not only funded the research, but also visited kids in hospitals.
Well, he never talked about it. So I would hear about it from other people. He wasn't going to come home and tell my mom, oh, I went to see this dying kid. He didn't do that. He didn't want anybody to know because it was personal. It was between him and the family. And he did not blow his own horn. He would never do it. And that's why I said to him in January of 2016, I need to write this book because the story, the true story of you and MDA needs to be told. And since I worked on the telethon for 39 years, I said, I'm the only person who can tell it. Plus, I saw it from your side.
How did he feel about you writing this book?
He thought it was a great idea. He said, I think it's a great idea.
Looking back on 75 years of the MDA and its existence, how would you summarize the organization and its accomplishments?
Well, the organization is amazing. It had some problems when Bob Ross died in 2006. The management of it just kind of went away, and there were three different administrations that gave it a lot of problems. But the investment that happened from the early days, as early as 1950, all the way up until 2006 when Bob Ross died, it became the organization for funding research, for genetic research. When they were looking for the Duchenne muscular dystrophy gene, the National Institutes of Health said, you cannot find a gene unless you know its protein product. And we don't. And MDA said, well, then we will find it. And MDA found it. I mean, that was the attitude. And with Dr. Don Wood as the head of MDA research, it was a dream come true.
So now looking back at the explosion of therapies, and particularly the development of gene therapy for Duchenne and gene therapy for SMA, it seems that we are on a threshold of more discovery.
Definitely there's more discoveries, but the fact that a child born with SMA can get a single dose of a drug and it will never progress in his body. I mean, that's an absolute miracle. My dad would think, we've done it. Even though we haven't found a cure, if you can stop the progression of the disease, you're improving people's lives. And that's what he was trying to do.
Do you think your father would have conceived that one day gene therapy could exist?
Yeah, because, you know, the first gene therapies happened, I think, in 99. So he was involved in it for probably 10 years, and he was always talking about it. And he was in awe of it. He didn't really understand how it worked. But then he said, they're using viruses? And I remember him having a conversation with Bob Ross about that. And Bob's going, I'll send you the papers. And he's sending stuff to my dad, and he was reading it. He goes, I can't believe it. It's like magic stuff.
If you could say something to your dad now, what would it be?
Why did you leave?
Well, impressive. Thank you. Thank you for your time. We've been talking to Chris Lewis, the son of world-famous comedian Jerry Lewis. We're here at the Muscular Dystrophy Association's conference in Dallas, Texas. And it was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.